Please stand by. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your patience. We'd like to welcome you to today's IBM Performance is Key to Customer Satisfaction. What do you do to ensure the performance of IMS conference? As a reminder, today's call is being recorded. And now, for opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the conference over to Diane McCollum. Ms. McCollum, please go ahead.
Thank you. Welcome, everybody, to Performance is Key to Customer Satisfaction, what you do to ensure the performance of your IMS. My name is Diane McCollum, and I am the Worldwide Sales Leader for IBM's DB2 for Z and DB2 and IMS tools. I will be your host today. Our speakers are Ed Woods from IBM, an IT specialist in the area of Tivoli Performance Automation, and David Vigers, also from IBM, an IMS advocate specializing in IMS performance, development, and tests. Now I'd like to turn it over to Ed. Ed?
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. First, I want to thank everyone on the call today. I appreciate your time, your attention. We will have live Q&A at the end of this, and so we'll appreciate your questions as well. It's a pleasure, again, to be presenting as a part of this forum. I always enjoy these sessions, and I trust you'll find this topic to be an interesting one. This is, I think, you'll find to be a nice topic because we're trying to look at the notion of IMS performance from a holistic approach. The idea basically is going from the top down, first trying to identify a problem, work the problem, isolate the problem, and then do the deep dive root cause analysis. And we're using a combination of tools in the scenario we're going to be discussing today. We're going to be looking at a Megamon IMS, and we're going to be looking at the IMS Performance Analyzer. And we'll get a better understanding, I think, of how these tools fit together and what works best in what context. So going to the next slide, which says agenda, I'll do first an introduction, talk about the facilities, capabilities of a Megamon XE for IMS. Then we'll do an introduction for a couple slides that will go through the facilities and capabilities of IMS Performance Analyzer. And then we'll turn the discussion back over to a more deep dive analysis of the capabilities of a Megamon XE for IMS, how you use it. I have a couple of customization recommendations to make that you might find interesting as we go through the exercise. Then I'll turn it back over to my colleague, Dave, and he will then in turn go through a more deep dive analysis of the problem using IMS Performance Analyzer. So beginning at the beginning then, let's go to the next slide, which says a Megamon XE for IMS V3.1, real-time components and facilities. Megamon XE for IMS has a whole set of capabilities and options, if you will. You have, of course, the real-time monitoring capability, which is going to monitor the subsystem, the regions, all the various resources, the various pools, databases, and that could be FastPath databases as well as regular databases, IMS Connect monitoring, OTMA monitoring. All this is viewable in a real-time fashion. The idea then is you have the ability to see what's happening in the IMS system and look at any of the status of any of the resources, transactions, PSPs, etc. The next major function or capability of a Megamon XE for IMS is the Response Time Analyzer, or RTA, as I commonly refer to it as. RTA will give you transaction response time, calculate average response time over various time intervals, and then will allow as well to identify problem transactions and to look at those problems over time. The next major component is bottleneck analysis. Bottleneck analysis looks at the workloads, looks at what's running in IMS, looks more importantly at where the workload is spending its time to give you a better idea of where bottlenecks are on the system. The idea then is if you know where the work is spending its time, then you're more likely to know where to tune. And ultimately, that's probably where you want to head towards. Find where the workload is spending its time and use that as the point of attack. The next major facility is Operator Assist in the Integrated Console Facility, or ICF as it's oftentimes referred to. This is basically a consolidated MTO capability. It's a nice facility for being able to do things like issue MTO commands, manage message suppression, highlight messages, searching capabilities, etc., issue IMS commands as well as MVS console commands as well as also network commands, etc. The next major component is the Online TRF, or TRANT TRF stands for Transaction Reporting Facility. I'll mention the TRF component on the next slide as well. TRF originally started as a historical capability, but also pieces of it as well have been enabled for real-time viewing. The ability to see things like DLI call statistics and things of that nature in a real-time fashion. There are trace facilities for tracing application execution. There's also extensive exception and alerting capabilities. The idea is then to use the exception and alerting capabilities of a Megamon to highlight a problem and then tell you when you have an issue on the IMS system and then where to go to drill down and do the deep dive analysis. I'll show examples of the exception and alerting capability in the initial portion of this presentation. If you're an NWAY data sharing shop, there's Plex level information. This takes the form of information specific to what's contained within the coupling facility, the structures within the coupling facility, NWAY data sharing type of information, shared message queues, for example, as well as things like not necessarily Plex specific, but just your MSC, your multiple systems coupling information as well. One thing I'll mention also is that there's integrated alerting and automation capabilities. What this means is that Omegamon XE has the ability not only to just drive an alert, but also drive an automated action based off of that alert. And that automated action could take the form of a ZOS console command or some other type of a command depending upon your infrastructure or your requirements. So these are the primary real-time facilities, real-time monitoring, analysis, alerting, and automation facilities included with the Megamon XE for IMS. The next slide shows the historical components. And there's three primary flavors of historical that come bundled with the Megamon XE for IMS. The first one is the Epilog historical. Epilog is a historical analysis capability. It will take information such as response time analysis, bottleneck analysis data, gather it, store it on an interval basis, typically 15 minutes. So basically, it will take that analytic data that's being gathered on an ongoing basis by a Megamon, store it into a VSAM file called an Epilog Data Store or an EDS, and that data is then in turn stored, categorized, and grouped so that you can then retrieve it, analyze it, and then correlate it with other performance information. That other performance information could be such things as CPU usage information, memory information, pool information, IO or exception type information that's gathered and stored within the Epilog Data Store. The premise is then is that Epilog historical gives the ability to do things like, say, if I'm having a problem with a certain group of transactions, what time intervals is that problem occurring, and then show me any correlated performance information such as pool statistics, IO statistics, CPU statistics, etc., for that time interval. Epilog is granular to the level of the group of workload items as well as to a time interval. If you need something that is more granular, that is where the TRF, or Transaction Reporting Facility, historical comes into play. TRF is a more detailed transaction and database analysis piece in that you can generate additional details, specifically more detailed database performance records. These records are stored in the IMS log and then may be retrieved for later reporting and analysis purposes. This is data that's suitable for detailed analysis and chargeback purposes. In addition, there's also historical that may be gathered at the level of the Omegamon XE portal interface. There's a choice of interfaces that I'll cover on the next slide that has the various options. You can go 327 interface, portal GUI interfaces, etc. When you use the Omegamon XE portal, there's also a snapshot historical capability wherein you can say, for example, I want to snapshot just region statistics on a regular interval basis, say every 15 minutes, every 5 minutes, whatever you deem appropriate. This is information that can be useful for trending and analysis purposes. It's not necessarily deep dive detail, but it gives you a nice trending capability. So then in turn, going to the next slide, this is where we see the choice of options, if you will, for Omegamon. What interfaces? Because basically with the Omegamon XE, you get a choice of three interface options. All three of these are available. It's purely a question of which ones you opt to use. There are capabilities that are unique to a certain degree to each of these. The top one shows the Omegamon XE GUI interface, or what we call as well the Tivoli Enterprise Portal, or you may have heard the term the TEP, T-E-P, TEP. Either way, this is a GUI interface that runs through a portal. You can run it through a browser or through a Java client. This provides real-time as well as historical. This is also powerful in terms of automation and alerting capabilities. The Omegamon XE GUI is also where you would go to get such things as coupling facility, N-way type information, and things of that nature. The next interface is the Omegamon Classic. Omegamon Classic is the original interface, the traditional interface, if you will, for the Omegamon IMS, as well as many of the other Omegamons. This is a 3270 interface, VTAM logonable. Also provides real-time as well as historical type information. You also see this is where I mentioned again RTA. RTA is the response time analyzer. And then you see another term as well called DEXAN. That basically refers to our bottleneck analysis piece. I'll go more into detail on these things later in the presentation. You can set exceptions in Classic, as well as you can set alerts using Omegamon XE. Generally, my recommendation is if you have detailed alerting capabilities, you will probably find more flexibility and capability using the Omegamon XE GUI for that function. The third interface option is the Omegamon CUA interface. This, too, is a VTAM logonable 3270 interface. This provides a 3270 interface that is typically a little more easy to use than the Classic interface, so CUA has its own capabilities as well. Classic, for many folks, is considered the power user interface. CUA is the perhaps easier to navigate and use, and that is more of a point-and-shoot type of an interface. There are facilities that are unique to the CUA that are not embedded within Classic. For example, the ICF, the console facility, that's the MTO thing I mentioned a couple slides ago, resides in there. There are other capabilities such as trace capabilities that reside within CUA that are not in Classic. You get, again, if you install Omegamon XE for IMS, you get a choice of any of these interfaces. It's up to you which ones you choose. There are unique and powerful capabilities for each of these. And oftentimes I get questions about things like, well, if we're going to have a portal interface, does that mean 3270 is going away? And the answer is no, 3270 is not going away. It's still a very supported and important part of the product. So again, the appropriate tool for the appropriate problem to be solved. So that's the introduction to Omegamon for IMS. What I'm going to do now is turn it over briefly to my colleague, Dave Vigers, and he will talk about just an introduction of what is IMS Performance Analyzer. So, Dave, over to you, sir.
Hey, thanks, Ed, and good morning, everyone. So we're looking now at the slide titled IMSPA Functions, and I just wanted to kind of give a brief overview of what we're looking at here and what we'll be looking at towards the end of this presentation. IMSPA, as most of you probably know, but if you don't, it has the ability to take as input and therefore report on both IMS log data and IMS monitor data. The PA log function uses any type of IMS log input, either the online logs that are currently there, or more typically, the SLDS, and creates a number of reports on various IMS resources, trans, PSBs, databases, MSC, you name it. I mean, there's a report to go with everything. Sometimes I actually think there's probably too many reports out there, but better too many than too few. PA Log has the ability to merge logs from multiple systems, so if you are in a N-way data sharing or shared queues environment, you can take logs from all the systems and feed them into PA, and it will merge the logs and create a consolidated report. You can also include or exclude any or all of the reports, so even though there are many, many different types of reports, if you know what you're going after, you can select, pick and choose which reports you want to report out on, or you can just choose basically all of them if you don't really have a good handle on the problem. just choose them all, and then we'll pick and choose the data from the different reports. You can also include or exclude any or all resources. So if you knew, for example, you're having a problem with a particular transaction or a particular set of transactions, you could say, just give me the reports on this specific transaction and exclude everything else. So a lot of possibilities there, a lot of different reports that can be gotten off the IMS log. A lot of good information is kept there. The other side of IMS PA is the PA monitor function. This, as it says, uses the IMS monitor file as input. So you start up the IMS monitor as you always would with the trace set on mon all or selected monitor functions. Now, Ed mentioned something just a few minutes ago about alerts and being able to automate operations and so forth. So one of the things we talked about here was the possibility that you set up an alert in a Megamon and have a Megamon trigger turning on the IMS monitor for, you know, a specific time period, maybe 2 minutes or 5 minutes or something like that. So you could say, you know, if my system starts to slow down or certain transactions start to queue up beyond a certain threshold that I've established, then, you know, we may need more information to debug that. Therefore, let's go ahead and turn the IMS monitor on for a short period of time so that we will have at least captured that data and we can go back later if necessary and take a closer look. Now, the monitor is typically going to give you a lot more detailed information than what you can get off the IMS log. There's a wealth of information on the log, and you can see how long transactions are taking in the various stages and so forth. But if we've narrowed it down to a specific TRAN or program or something like that, we may need to figure out in much more detail what actually was happening with that transaction. And that's where the kind of data available with the monitor can be very helpful. So it allows us to drill down to specific areas or specific calls within the application program and figure out where is our bottleneck, where is our delay. And another function as part of the PA monitor is the ability to go in and trace an application flow. So you can see all of the DLI calls, all of the iWaits that occur during the processing of that application, and many times be able to zero in on specifically which calls are the problem or which databases are the problem. Am I having an I/O problem? Anyway, there's a lot of detailed information that you can get from doing the application trace. As a matter of fact, a lot of times you don't know ahead of time that you're going to need that detailed information, but if you have the IMS monitor data set, then either you or if you happen to get to the point where you send the problem into IBM, one of the things we'll ask for is not the PA monitor report or even the standard old IMS monitor report, but we'll ask you to send in the actual raw data set, terse it like you would a log, and send it into us. And what that gives us is the ability to go in and drill in on specific applications if that happens to be necessary. All right, so moving on to the next overview slide, which is the interface. You still have the good old JCL and control card interface. And the way I look at this is that's a good interface. I mean, that's basically what you're going to generate with the second option, but it works fine if you already have the job set up from years and years ago, and you typically run the same reports each time. But it's not okay to do it from scratch because there are so many commands and so many options, and the syntax is not always that easy to figure out. So I would certainly suggest going down to the second option, at least in the beginning, which is the ISPF menu-driven interface. It's a whole lot easier to use. You don't have to worry about the syntax of the control statements and the names of the various reports and all of that good information. It also allows you to use DBRC to figure out which logs to select. So with that interface, you can go in and tell IMSPA to go in and generate me reports from this time period. Allow IMSPA to go in and select the appropriate logs from the DBRC information for that time period, and it will generate the necessary JCL and control cards to generate the reports. So it's easy to select and deselect various reports based on the needs. Many times I know myself, I'll have a job set up that I typically run, but given the circumstance, I may figure out that, doggone it, the report I needed just wasn't in my pre-canned JCL that I run all the time. So rather, again, than try to go back and figure out from the manuals what the command is that I need to add to this control card information to get the report, I'll just go back into the menu-driven interface and generate the necessary statements. The end result of using the ISPF interface will be that IMSPA will create all of the JCL and all of the control statements, and then you can choose to submit the job immediately, or you can choose to get the JCL back in a temporary file if you need to modify it for any reason whatsoever. So a lot of options there. One option I did not include on the slides, which is fairly recent, is there's also a function in IMSPA to use information about IMS Connect and report specifically on IMS Connect. I don't have any more details on that at this point, but it is another major new function of IMSPA. So with that, Ed, I'll turn it back over to you.
Great. Thank you. So let's go to the next slide, which says an IMS performance analysis scenario. And what we'll do then is we'll step through the typical kind of scenario and discuss the various options that you have. We'll start from an Omegamon perspective, because typically that's where you would start initially, to at least highlight, find the problem, identify that you have an issue, and then do your drill down, deep dive analysis from there. So in this case, we have an application. The users may be reporting slower than expected response time. Presumably, you might already have alerts in place, or should optimally have alerts in place that would be detecting that problem before the phone calls, the old proactive type of approach, if possible. The application in question, though, is a complex composite type of application. There's many different technologies and pieces that come into play here. So IMS could be a central part of this application flow, but there could be a lot of other pieces that tie into this as well. In our example, we have Omegamon XE for IMS installed. It's integrated using this thing called Omegamon DE. DE stands for the Dashboard Edition, and basically the DE provides an integration piece that lets you tie together all sorts of IBM monitoring technologies. And so in other words, then you could have IBM monitoring for IMS, as well as DB2, as well as MQ middleware, and all these other capabilities as well to tie together the monitoring infrastructure. In addition, we have IMS Performance Analyzer available, and this will provide us with our deep dive analysis capabilities that Dave will discuss later on in this presentation. So the objective of the exercise is, first of all, how do we identify and isolate the initial performance issue? We know we'll have an alert from Omegamon that detects that there's an issue. We know as well that we're probably receiving phone calls from users, whatever, that we're also having an issue. So now then it's how to isolate the problem, how to analyze the problem, what are the appropriate tools to use, how do we do the detailed analysis and drill down ultimately to the root cause. So going to the next slide, which says Omegamon XE for IMS and Omegamon DE. As I mentioned before, the application in question is a complex, what we call a composite application, that ties together many different platforms and technologies. This is typically what we see nowadays is that IMS, for example, is part of a much bigger picture with many pieces and parts hanging in all sorts of different places and neighborhoods, if you will, connecting to and talking to IMS. So in this example here, we're looking at what we call a dashboard view. The dashboard, or what we call Omegamon DE, the DE stands for Dashboard Edition, integrates various monitoring capabilities. So in this scenario, we see IMS as part of the infrastructure, if you will, but there's also, of course, ZOS, CICS, DB2, there's middleware components, app server layers that are off of ZOS, as well as we see Z-Linux in the picture as well. And these types of flows are common nowadays. So what you get with the Omegamon dashboard is the ability to tie together these composite views to see a graphic overview. The graphic in question that we're looking at here is a graphic that I customized. It's the form of a JPEG, and then I incorporated into the portal to actually show the screen. The GUI capabilities, which is what we call the Omegamon XE, is based through a mechanism called the Tivoli Enterprise Portal. So you see in the top red box it says Tivoli Enterprise Portal with Omegamon DE. So technically what we're doing is we're running the Tivoli Portal and we're running Omegamon DE within there, and we're using the Omegamons to feed this portal dashboard view. If you look into the screen itself, we see green icons that represent the status of our various monitored resources. And we see we have a red icon in the IMS box, and we see that IMS is having an issue. And you can actually click on that icon to get more detail. Basically, what this means is because IMS has gone red, we know that Omegamon has detected some type of alert related to the issue that's being reported by the users. So if you go to the next slide, this is where you would see more detail about the alert. So in this case, all we've done is put the cursor on the red icon, and now you'll get a flyover window that will give you more detail about the alert in question. What we're seeing in this case is that we have an alert. The alert is called EWIMS TranQ'd. We see the name of the alert. We see what system it's on. What LPAR is it on? When did the alert fire? You could then in turn click on the alert in question and drill down and get more detail. So you can see more detail specific to the alert simply by clicking on it from this point. So the graphic overview gives you an idea in terms of where the issue is. The icons are basically Omegamons that are monitoring their corresponding components. If you see the icon change color, you can then in turn click and see what the alert is and then drill down for more detail. This alert mechanism is built on a technique we call a situation. So using the Omegamon XE portal-based technology, alerts or exceptions are now based on this thing called situations. A situation has many capabilities, not only just to generate alerts, but also to do automated actions and things like that, and I'll talk about that more in just a couple of slides. So to see the detail for the alert, you click on, you see if you look at the name of the alert in the area I have outlined in red, right to the left of where it says EWIMS TranQ'd, you see a blue icon. Looks like a chain link or a paper clip or something like that. You click on that, and that would take you to the next slide, which says Isolate the Problem Situation Detail. So in this slide, we see what's the problem, what are the details about the problem, is there any expert advice, and are there any predefined actions? So in a little more detail then, what are the details? Well, we see the initial situation status and the current situation status. So again, a situation is an alert. A situation is basically going out and checking on a regular basis to see if there is such a problem. So in this case, what we're seeing is that our transactions, when the situation was initially set up, that hit a threshold of 25. And once 25 transactions had queued up, we generated the alert. The current status is 35 transactions are queued. So basically what this is telling us is that this has been true, this has been a problem for a while, and it's getting worse. It's not getting better. We're progressively backing up more and more work here. So this would also show us other details about the workload in question, but right now we can see that we have transactions queued and we see how deep those transactions are queued. in the expert advice portion of this window, this is something that can be user definable. With each of the Omegamons, you get a set of what we call product provided situations that check for common issues and problems in each of the subsystems. So, for example, the Omegamon XE for IMS comes with a set of these product provided situations. And the product provided situations would already have expert advice and recommendations coded in. Now, since this is an alert that I created myself, this is where I could put in things like things to check, things to do, who to call, commands you may issue, etc. You can also put in links to internal web pages and things like that, so that you have various ways you can link together the management infrastructure using the situation capability. So expert advice is customizable. To the left of the expert advice portion of the screen, you see take action. This is where you could have predefined actions. So if there was a command that you wanted to be issued every time this alert fired, you would then click in the line where it says select action. You'd see a little arrow that points down to the right of where it says select action. You would click that, and then you would have a predefined list of commands. You would select the command you want, and then click run, and that command would go. In the case of, now we're talking ZOS and IMS monitoring, in this case here, this would be in the form of a ZOS console command. But you could have other types of commands as well. So what is the problem? The details, expert advice, predefined actions. Going to the next slide, this is where we show how the situation is coded. So in this particular scenario, what we're looking at here is this, what we call the situation editor. This is how you define the alerts in question. So an alert or an exception becomes now a situation when we're talking Omegamon XE. In the middle portion of the situation editor, we see that there's two things that we're checking for in this particular example. We're just checking for a count of transactions greater than or equal to 25, or we have a description. In this case, we're just looking for transactions in a queued state. Now, you could add other items of information or what we call conditions or attributes to this. So you could also say, for example, well, which transcodes, in essence, or other combinations of information. Or maybe you could take into account days of the week, time of day, whatever. So there's additional logic, Boolean and or logic, you can add to this mechanism. Typically what you find in most scenarios is you might have it where certain transactions, if they queue up, it's not a big deal because operationally these trans may queue during the day and then you open up a region later on to go ahead and process these at a later point. So in this case, then, you might make the alert a little more sophisticated than that. You would tune out those that you don't care if they queue and focus the alert on those that you do care if they queue. I've kept the scenario fairly simple in this case here. So again, and or logic, this is the situation criteria. You can specify single attributes or multiple attributes, add as much logic as you typically would need to the alert to make it be effective. Towards the bottom, you see it says specify the alert level and whether to run at startup. So you can specify this alert to be critical, warning, or purely informational. And then you see a little checkbox that says run at startup. What that means is that if you click that, that means the alert will automatically deploy and start when Omegamon comes up. Now, just a couple things about the tabs you see at the top part of the situation editor. What we're looking at here then is we're looking at the tab that says formula. This is basically what we're checking for. If you look at the next tab over, which says distribution, so again, we're looking at the top portion of this particular pop-up. The distribution, this says where does the alert in question run. You might have certain alerts that you would deploy to test systems but not production or vice versa. You have the ability then to specify the situation logic and then control from a single point of control, from a single portal view, which IMS systems this alert gets deployed to. The next tab over is the expert advice. You would click on that tab, and then that's where you would specify the text and things that we looked at on the prior screen. And then the next tab to the right says action. This is where you would actually attach a command to the situation. In this case, this command could be the form of any kind of a command that would go to the ZOS console. So if you recall what my colleague Dave was mentioning earlier on about how you could, if you detect a certain problem in an IMS system, transaction queuing, whatever, you could then in turn issue a command that could start up an appropriate IMS monitor trace and gather some additional diagnostic information. And so it was would be from this action tab that you would have the ability to do that. The idea then is run traces using the machine monitoring capabilities, if you will, of the Omegamon itself, and then trace on an intelligent basis when you know there's issues that need to be analyzed in more detail. So all of this capability from the single pop-up of the situation editor, you define the situation, you start it, and it goes off and it does its thing. So going to the next slide, which says problem isolation next steps. Well, first of all, we want to look for stop bottleneck resources. We know we have a problem. We know we have workload that's queuing up. We know that it's queuing up and it's getting worse based upon what we've seen in the situation view. So we need to get to some kind of a root cause analysis in terms of why the workload is queuing. Now, it could simply be that we're having some type of an issue where resources are getting stopped. Maybe a transaction's ab-bending, getting restarted. It could be something as simple as that. Maybe there's a region that should be out there that isn't out there. You know, it's nice if some things are simple like that, but oftentimes the challenges can be more detailed that you need to dive into. So that's where you get into the intermediate level of analysis, which would be the Omegamon XC bottleneck analysis capabilities and things like that. And then ultimately, if you want to get down to the most level of detail, that's where you would then in turn get into the IMS performance analyzer. So this is the basic flow, if you will, of what we're going to try to do. So let's start with the easy stuff first, and we'll look and see if we have anything that's stopped or backed up or whatever on the system. So in this case, going to the next slide, the heading says, leverage the power of Omegamon XE, create a stopped resource display. So this is not a screen that comes directly out of the product. This is something I've customized to handle scenarios like this. But this is what I call a stopped resource display. Basically, what I've done in this case here is I've built a screen, or what we call in Omegamon XE terminology, a workspace. And then in this workspace, you have the ability to filter and control the content. And so in this case, what you're going to see is if there are any databases, transactions, programs, whatever, that are in a stopped or some other kind of an exception status. It doesn't necessarily have to be stopped. It could be any kind of an exception status that you're trying to track. It would appear on this particular screen. So if you look in the bottom right portion of the screen where it says PSP stopped, you'll actually see there is a program that's stopped. Now, in this case, this is not a program that I'm worried about because it's not relevant to the one that I'm trying to analyze. So, you know, it's nice informational, but at this point I'm not worried about that particular one. But if there were any other PSBs, databases, trans, whatever, that were getting stopped or getting stopped and restarted or whatever, you would see them appear on this screen because this, again, is a real-time view. And each time you would click the refresh icon on the top portion of the screen, it would actually go ahead and refresh the information. Other information I might like to add, well, I went ahead and I threw the dependent region overview into this display. I could also have optionally added response time analyzer information and things like that. I chose to keep it simple just for clarity and just to be able to fit information on the screen. But you could add whatever you want to this view. I'll demonstrate after I'm done discussing this how this screen was built. But first, there are a couple other things I want to mention on here. So, as I look at the stop resource display, I'm looking for any kind of items that might be stopped that could be causing a backup or having an impact. I see one thing that's stopped, but it's not relevant to my workload in question. So, it's not as simple as just something's getting stopped. So now let's look at the next step, which would be let's look at our dependent regions. And in our dependent regions, we see the overview of our regions. We see what type of regions. If it's processing workload, transactions, what is it processing, how many database calls, just looking at the various column headers. And then you see a number that says region occupancy percent. Region occupancy percent is basically, it's not quite really a percent busy. I usually use the analogy of it's more like a general percentage full for the various regions. And sometimes as that region occupancy percent climbs and climbs and climbs, what will happen then is workload will tend to back up more and more. So if you look down the region occupancy percent numbers, you notice that there's a couple message regions that are listed here that have occupancy percents that are getting into the 80s. Different shops have different philosophies on how to target that number. Some shops might like to keep that number higher. Other shops might not want that number to get that high, and if it gets above a certain percent, they'll go ahead and break out additional regions for the workload in question. Different tuning philosophies depending on how the applications work. Bottom line is, as regions get busier and busier and busier, there's a greater likelihood that workload may queue up. Now, as the regions get busier, that could be because we have more workload arriving, or that could be as well because that the workload that's getting into the region is taking a little bit longer. That little bit longer could be due to database contention issues, whatever. The bottom line is, we know nothing is stopped or anything like that. We see that our occupancy percent might be getting higher. We know we need to do some more analysis and get down to the next level, bottom line. Before I get off of this screen, though, I want to mention how I built the workspace in question. So the next slide says how to create the custom workspace that I've just defined here. And what you would do is you would do a right-click, select the properties option, and then this is the properties pop-up that we see here. So from the properties pop-up, you have several different buttons you can specify. And so I have several of these highlighted. So if you look in the middle on the different tabs, you have the query tab, which controls the content, the data content, the information that appears on the screen. So this is where I could go to the query thing to say, okay, I want to see PSB information, transaction information, database information. There's all these different queries that come with the Omegamon monitor that go out and gather this information. This is where I would also go to say, give me things like response time information or region overview or whatever. Then if you look to the right of that, we're now looking at what we call the filters option. The filters tab lets me control the content, lets me control what columns of information appear within the display. Oftentimes, I'll be selective in what columns appear on a workspace because I don't want the display to be too busy. I want to target the specific information that's most relevant to the view I'm trying to see. So the filter tab gives me that capability. If you look closely at the area I have outlined in red, right in the middle of the filter display here, you see here's where I specify the conditions that I'm looking for. So I'm looking for things that are queued, queuing, stopped, whatever. If I see something that fits that particular criteria at the moment, then I'll go ahead and highlight that. If you look to the right of where it says filters, you see thresholds. It's in thresholds where you see things, or I should say where you can specify the highlighting. So if you recall on the prior screen, there was red highlighting for something that was stopped. Well, that's how you could highlight that, with red, yellow, or some other kind of a color. So using this technique then, this is how you would control the content of a custom screen, to specify the filtering options in terms of what will appear, and then how you can build this. The premise and the process of building this screen, if you will, the screen is what we call in the Omegamon parlance a workspace. So going to the next slide, once you build the screen in question, you want to save the screen, or workspace again as we call it. So you would simply go then to File and say Save As, and then the workspace in question that we've just created and customized here would be stored in the Tivoli Enterprise Portal server. The portal server is basically part of the Tivoli monitoring infrastructure that all the Omegamon XE capabilities plug into, so that then if you build a custom screen such as this, or workspace, to use the correct name, that workspace is saved in the portal and is there available for later reuse and to be shared amongst your colleagues. So, we've looked for the simple stuff, nothing really obvious there. We know we need to do a more deep dive analysis. So going to the next slide then, it says problem analysis, next steps. General recommendation and flow on how I suggest people use the tool. Use the XE interface for the big picture, to isolate problems, to identify problems, just so that you have some type of a way to identify and do that initial diagnostic isolation. Gives you an idea where to go look. Use the XE interface for the alerting capabilities. The alerting is very flexible, powerful. You can incorporate all sorts of logic and capabilities in the Omegamon XE alert mechanisms. And then also, again, you can attach commands to the Omegamon XE alerts, or again, what we call situations. So, again, reinforcing the scenario that Dave mentioned earlier, you could have an Omegamon XE alert detect a certain problem in the IMS system, and then if that situation is true, actually have it issue a command, a ZOS command, or in the case of what we're discussing here, could be a command to start the IMS monitor, and then in turn use that data as input to some of the reports that Dave will be discussing in a little bit. Along with that, you still have 3270 Classic and CUA interfaces to use for deep dive analysis. And so this then gets you down to the next level. Now, you can see response time analysis data in the Omegamon XE portal view, but bottleneck analysis data still requires that you go down to 3270 Classic or CUA interface. So in the examples that I'm going to show in the next couple slides, I'll be showing you Classic and CUA examples so you can see that interface and how I use that information to take it to the next level. So don't forget about history, though. History can be useful, and history comes in several flavors if we're talking Omegamon. We have our TEP, that's our Tivoli Enterprise Portal history, the epilogue, as well as transaction reporting facility detail history. I'll talk more about that in a bit. And then ultimately, to get down to the nth level of detail, that's where you would do the analysis using IMS Performance Analyzer. And then that's the last portion of the presentation, which Dave will go through in a few slides here. So going to the next slide, which says Response Time Analyzer, or RTA. Response Time Analyzer captures the response time data from the IMS system, places the average response time information into buckets. So basically what happens is Response Time Analyzer runs on an ongoing basis, typically, looks at all the transactions flowing through the system, gathers counts of the transactions, calculates the response time, puts that data into various buckets. The buckets are user definable. So in other words, you can create groups of related transactions. These groups can be based on TRAN code, program name, for example, L-term. There's various different combinations. You can wildcard. My recommendation is target key applications, major important applications, loved ones or problem children, as I call them, and then use those as your targets. Once you define a group, you have to define the group permanently using a macro. The macro in question, module in question, is called KOIGBL. The XX basically implies that you can have multiple of these macros set up. So this will measure the queuing and service time within IMS. The thing to mention about the grouping mechanisms is that the response time analyzer groups also work for both response time analyzer and the other piece of this, DEXAN. DEXAN is a term that you may or may not be familiar with. DEXAN stands for Degradation Exception Analyzer. Literally what we're referring to here is bottleneck analysis, as we call it. Going to the next slide, which says response time buckets. So when we capture the response time, we'll get basically six counts. The P time is the processing time, which is the portion in the middle. We have PI and I time. Basically, PI means program switch time. I time refers to the in-queue time, which is the time queuing in the region before it actually gets to the message region. O time is the time it's spent waiting on the output queue. There's also summary counters that get generated. You have an R1 versus an R0 time. R1 is typically the sum of I, P, and O time, the in-queue, processing, and out-queue. R0 basically just ignores the out-queue time. If we go to the next slide, now we'll look at some of the representative data that comes from Response Time Analyzer. In this particular example, we're looking at CUA interface. This is a 3270 screen. And so what we see here is response time for various groups of transactions over the last half hour, hour, or an hour. I'm sorry, last 5 minutes, half hour, an hour, correction. So you see the intervals, you see how far we are into the corresponding intervals, and then if you look at the various groups, we see the number of transactions and the average response time. If you look in the portion that I've highlighted, we have some TRN transactions that are having very high response time. averaging like 18, 19, 15 seconds. And so you see that it's typically, it looks like as we've gone along in time, it's gotten worse. Because an hour ago, it was averaging about 15 minutes. And now it's averaging seconds. And now it's getting down to about, it's still 18, 19 seconds. If you look at the bottom pop-up, this is the drill down that shows basically what makes up the group. So in this case, we're just saying transactions that start with TRN, how many of these we've had, and we're looking at our same intervals again. You can define the various groups based upon things like transcode, related program, whatever, and then in turn, correlate them, give them a name. So you look at the group names here. We see group names like TRN, ledger, finance. So this is someone that's actually gone and customized these groups. The group definitions that come by default out of the product usually have things like just class 1, class 2, class 3 defaults. One of my recommendations is if you're going to exploit this capability of the tool, you want to take advantage of the grouping mechanisms, group-related key workload items, and therefore that enables you to do this analysis. This in turn then takes us to the next slide, which says degradation exception analysis, or DEXAN. So the grouping that's established for RTA also in turn then drives bottleneck analysis. Degradation analysis samples the workloads, runs on an ongoing basis, and looks at workloads in various contexts. In other words, competing, not competing, or executing. Competing basically means this is a workload that could be processed but may or may not be queued at the time. Not competing basically means that the workload in question can't be processed because something is stopped. Executing means that this is workload that is currently running in regions being processed by an IMS iTask at this moment. You might look at things in different ways depending upon how you want to see things and what information you might want to filter out. So, for example, you might look at executing versus competing because you want to just focus on what's in the regions and you want to tune out the queuing times and delay percentages, et cetera, that might result if you included that time. Going to the next slide shows an example of the bottleneck analysis output. Here we're looking at a short-term column of numbers and a long-term. So if you look at the foreground window here, we see short-term, long-term, and a wait reason right in the middle of the screen. Underneath the wait reasons, you see all sorts of different wait reasons, database waits, MVS waits, ESS, external subsystem weights, in other words, DB2. You'll also see weights for things like CPU, dependent region weights, etc. These are all percentages. The bottleneck analyzer calculates, gets counts, and then calculates percentages based off of that. Short-term column is 5 minutes. Long-term is up to 30. And then what happens is once the buckets reset, the numbers will reset. What we're looking at in this example here is we see that if we look at the database weights and the ESS, the DB2 weights, that's 56%. That's the majority of the wait time for this particular workload that we're looking at here. So now, are these good numbers or bad numbers? Well, it's the classic vendor, it depends. It depends on the workload. Every workload's different. My recommendation is look at a workload while it's running well, get an idea of what the typical profile is in bottleneck analysis then, so that when you're looking at it, when there's a problem, you'll have a better idea if there's a real issue or not. So going to the next slide, which then says getting the root cause analysis. Well, we've talked about the historical as well as real-time here, so exploit the historical capabilities of the portal using snapshot analysis. You can also use epilog history to get historical response time, bottleneck, and resource information. So a lot of the things that we've looked at in terms of response time, bottleneck, et cetera, you can see historical in epilog versus the real-time. Transaction reporting facility is detailed reporting records coming from the IMS log. And then the next thing that we're going to discuss is going to be the IMS performance analyzer, which is the detailed IMS performance breakdowns, if you will. So at this point then, I'm going to turn it back over to my colleague, Dave, and he's going to go into more detail on getting down to the nitty-gritty on the problem, which is the IMS Performance Analyzer. So, Dave, back to you, sir.
Thanks again, Ed. So if we turn to the slide titled IMS PA, okay, I mentioned before in the overview, right, we have both the PA log and the PA monitor functions. But for today, I'm just going to assume that we've gotten the information we need from a Megamon, or we've already run the PA log, and we just need to get some more detailed information about what's going on in the system and causing these long delays. Okay, so I said we're going to use the PA monitor function. And as Ed just mentioned, we could have triggered that, and it might be a good idea to trigger that based on some Omegamon alert or situation that we've set up and said, you know, if we queue up or response time goes beyond a certain limit, then let's go ahead and trigger Omegamon to start up the IMS monitor. TRF will give us some of the same information, but we might choose not to run TRF all the time, just like we don't typically run the monitor all of the time, because there's a certain overhead and we're using a lot more DASD and so forth. So what I want to do now is go through a couple of scenarios on how we might use PAMON to further analyze a couple of different situations. And one key thing to remember with almost all performance problems is that we need to have some comparison data available. A single sample may be enough if your system or certain transactions have gotten really, really bad. In that case, they stand out like a sore thumb, and we can hone in maybe on what the problem is. But what I found is most times it's a much more subtle difference, or it's a some other condition is causing the delay in certain trans, which then caused the delay in other trans. And so most times a single sample is just not going to be enough. So the key here is that we need to run, whether it's the monitor or log reports or whatever, on a reasonably regular basis. And a key time to do that might be, maybe if your system's pretty stable, running it once a week at peak and non-peak times, that might be enough. And just save that data. Archive it away, use a GDG or something like that, and save the data. However, one other key time to save data is before you do some major upgrade or major migration. Be sure that you run the monitor before you do the migration, and then run it again afterwards, because that'll give us the comparison that many times we need to figure out what the problem is. Now, skip the next slide, because that was a finger check, and that was just a copy of the previous one before I fixed some of the grammar. So moving on to the one that says IMS PA scenario number one. The situation we had here, and these are real-life examples that I pulled off, Tran 30 is running very slow. By very slow, it's over 20 seconds. And the reason we know that is because there were terminals, end-user terminals, that were timing out, and the timeout was set at 20 seconds. If they didn't receive a response, the terminal would time out, and that caused all sorts of problems for the end-user. Now, Omegamon, the conflict screen, that I don't think it did show, but there is a conflict screen, and it showed us we were getting a lot of contention for a database called HistDB, and one could imagine that is a history database. And what we found was that the holder, many times, by using the Omegamon conflict screen, was Tran 20. Okay, and so Tran 20 was the holder, Tran 30 was the victim in this case. So what we ran was the IMS PA monitor report with many reports selected. And the key here is it's better to go ahead and run the IMSPA, whether it's the log or the monitor reports, in this case the monitor, with most of the reports enabled. There's going to be some that you don't need. I mean, if you're not an MSC shop, if you're not a FastPass shop, and so on and so forth, if there are certain key functions you don't use, then you don't need to specify those reports. But what I've found is if you try to select what you think you need, you'll almost always have a situation where, doggone it, I've gotten this far. What I really need is this other report. So then you have to go back and rerun it. Hopefully you've still got the data set to rerun it with to get what you need. So better to run with too many than too few. So what I did in this example, or what we did, was there's a report called the Program Summary Report. And since we knew the holder was this TRN020, we looked at that. We found that indeed, it's running a long time. So moving to the next slide is an example of what you would see in the Program Summary Report out of IMSPA. And I have to go back and say, yeah, 30 was running a long time. What we found looking at this report was looking to see, okay, TRAN 30 was kind of a victim, we decided. And TRAN 20 was holding locks a lot of time, but not all the time. So what I did was I went down through the program summary looking for some transaction PSB combination that had similar elapsed times to the one that we've identified as the victim. And sure enough, you know, it stood out like a sore thumb. If I went down the elapsed time under the per transaction column there, there's that one at the bottom, PSB020N, is averaging 21.5 seconds. And also, if we look to the right of there, we can see that the CPU time, the call time, the iWait time, they're really very little values, very small values. So what on earth is making up 21.5 seconds of time? At that point, what we did was we said, okay, let's zero in on this transaction and figure out why this PSB, why this transaction is running so long. So let's run the PA monitor application trace for that particular PSB. And on the next page, also titled Scenario 1, but here we see an example of the program trace output. Now, I didn't include everything here to keep it relatively simple, so there's missing information before and after. But if you just look real quickly down the column on the left-hand side there, you'll see that the relative times of 3.2 milliseconds, 4.4, 4.6, and then all of a sudden we jump to 24 seconds. That's a fairly big jump. Okay, so that's between, if you see the call number column, right, we jumped up from call 11 to call 12, so from a DLI standpoint, we issued an insert to the history segment in the history database, of course. And the next thing we did was a get unique to the history database. And somewhere between those two calls, we used up 24 seconds of elapsed time. And by the way, since we did an insert to the history segment of the history database, we're holding a lock on that particular block at that point. Now, the other interesting information is looking out at the very right-hand column where it shows the call elapsed time. We can see that insert to the history database only took 1.288 milliseconds of time, and then the following call only took 1.1 milliseconds. So the calls themselves are being executed in very short order and getting the job done, but there's something happening between those two. And so that's the question we asked. What's happening between call 11 and call 12? We can't tell from an IMS perspective. We're doing nothing, right? But we're waiting, holding those locks. This turned out, just so you understand how we use the trace, is we were able to go back and say, okay, this application used to run in a few milliseconds. It's now running in 24 seconds in some cases. Okay. What happened to that application? And it turned out, after a quick call to the person that owned the application, that we found out that they just made a quick little change to the application and put that in production over the weekend. And so right in between those two calls, they added a native APPC call to go out to some other remote application and wait for the answer before they responded. So in this case, IMS was clearly the victim. They were able, this particular customer was able to go in and say this is just too much of an impact. It's causing too much of a delay in the system. And so they were able to approve getting the application changed back to the way it was and recycled the region, and everything was fine from that point forward. So that's just one example of using the PA Monitor program summary and the program trace to narrow down where the problem is and then figure out how to fix it. Moving on to scenario two. Just like scenario one, many transactions were running very slow at peak times, but low to moderate loads were fine. The transactions were completing in their normal number of milliseconds, whatever that happened to be, and so we weren't getting any alerts. Things looked to be fine. But doggone it, at those 10 o'clock hour and 2 p.m. hour, the system really, really got bad. But it seemed to be common to most of the trans in the system. And so what we decided to do here was say, since the problem does seem to be common to all of the transactions in the system, or at least most of them, let's go directly to the iWait summary report. And here in the iWait summary report, I've omitted a little bit, but kept in the important information. Just to show you what's in this report, we can see that for instance, if we look at the left-hand side where it says IO iWaits, and it says elapsed per iWait, we get an average elapsed per iWait. We can see that for OSAM in general, we're seeing 7 milliseconds, VSAM 13 milliseconds, and for the FastPath, we're getting about 3. So, and we can also see the bottom part, I put it by database. There's another section of the report where you get the database iWaits by specific database. In this case, we were able to confirm that the problem was widespread. It was not just happening to a few selected databases. It was pretty widespread. And now moving on to the next slide, the question I had to ask was, was there any problems noted in the previous report? And on the surface, it didn't look too bad. Some of those numbers were a little high, I would think, certainly the VSAM IO times and even the OSAM IO times. But there's a lot of factors that could cause the times to be high depending on the block size and so forth. However, that particular example that I showed you was the one from the moderately low load time. And when we took another sample, comparing the low load to the peak time, what we found was the IO iWait times jumped up to 2 to 3 times, in some cases more than 2 to 3 times of what they were in that previous report. So now you can understand if the VSAM IOs start taking, instead of 13 milliseconds on average, start taking 30 to 40 milliseconds, this is going to start having a major impact on the system. Now, since they were all higher, and from an IMS perspective, that's that's basically as close as we could get. We said, well, we know the problem is I/O, and we know it's not concentrated on any particular database data sets. Let's go back and take a look at the RMF reports. And so we went back to look at RMF data and found out that, sure enough, we were seeing where during the peak times and even the non-peak times, we had controllers and paths that were just plain old overloaded. It was tolerating the moderate times, but when we got to the peak load times, it just could not keep up with the volume of I/O requests that IMS was needing to keep processing the data. So what can you do at that point? Okay, well, we looked at, and we did do some tuning of both the FastPath and the full function database buffer pools to try to decrease the amount of I/O we were doing. We were getting pretty good hit rates and occupancy, buffer occupancy times before, so it really wasn't something that helped a whole lot, but it was something that we could do with parameters on the tuning. And this was happened to be a Sysplex database sharing environment, so we were actually able to recycle the IMSs and keep the system available to all the users. Of course, we did that at a low load time, but we were able to recycle, bring up with some larger buffer pools, and mitigate the problem a bit. Okay, the problem was that now the volume is ever increasing, so this was really a short-term fix. Bottom line was that we had reached a point in this particular installation where we needed more hardware. There was enough physical storage available to hold all the databases, but there weren't enough controllers and there weren't enough separate paths to handle the volume that this system needed. So here's a case where in both these scenarios I used, we were able to use the PA monitored data to drill down and figure out what the specific problem was, and in both these cases it turned out that IMS was actually the victim and not the cause of the problem. So moving to the final page, which is the summary, you've probably already noticed that OmegaMon and IMSPA have many overlapping reports or information, but each is suited best for different types of monitoring. It may turn out, and most people use OmegaMon for dynamic online monitoring and adding regions and checking for stopped resources, as I mentioned. But just many times, if we have an actual problem transaction or problem database, we need to zero in and get a lot more detail. And one of the ways to do that is by turning on the IMS monitor and going in and doing some more detailed analysis. Okay, there, OmegaMon and IMSPA have many, many functions and features, and Ed and I have just scratched the surface on all the possibilities of what's available out there. We certainly use them internally here at IBM to resolve a lot of problems. Deciding which functions to use, we can't tell you that. It's determined by your need. Some people will need to use many of the functions. They have both FastPath and full function, both transactions and databases, and they'll need to run with a lot more reports enabled and a lot more function than folks that run purely vSAM full function and something like that. And finally, don't be afraid to run with all or most PA reports. They will by default, and you can specify, they will default to separate DD names. And so when you look at the output, I mean, if you run all the reports, you're liable to get some horrendous amounts of output on your SDSF output files. Okay, you certainly don't want to ever have to print all of that information. But since they will go out by default to separate DD names, you can go ahead and select the specific reports and then only capture the information you need and print that out if necessary or copy it off. I know myself, I use XDC to copy off specific DDs off into a SysPrint data set, and then I will, within SPF edit, I will take that data that monitor has given me and I'll go in and sort on certain columns so that some of the problems become much more visible. So that's it for our canned information here, and with that I'd like to turn it back over to the moderator for Q&A.
Thank you. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. For those of you joining us on speakerphones, please remember to turn off your mute function before signaling for a question. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 now, and we'll pause for just a moment. We have one question in our queue. We'll first go to Kay Wilson.
Hi, I have a system using on Prime XP. It's just XP. I got to have it loaded on a PC somewhere, right? Because I'm simply in a frame environment.
I had a hard time hearing that. I'm sorry. Was that just my phone or is there...
No, Mrs. Wilson, you're cutting in and out. Would
okay.
you be able to pick up your hands?
Yeah, I just picked up. I had it on speakerphone. Sorry. I was just wondering I'm in a mainframe environment, and I just thought to use the Omegamon XE, you basically have to have all this installed on a PC, right?
Well, how it works is you'll have Omegamon running on the mainframe, as always, and there is... one piece that you would need in addition, and that would be a portal server component, and that's what makes the pretty screens.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the portal server could reside on a Windows box. You could also run it on a Z Linux LPAR on your mainframe. So it could still be a mainframe-centric infrastructure, but there does need to be a portal component at some point.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Next up from J.B. Morgan Chase, we have Rick Hamilton.
Yeah, this is, related to tracing for Omegamon.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any kind of performance hit if I leave tracing on for a long period of time?
Specific to Omegamon or just general tracing?
Just the Omegamon trace.
Okay, now there's several tracing aspects. You have the application trace, you have online TRF, as well as just batch TRF. So are you talking any of these components or just one in particular?
Well, the current tool we have from another vendor allows me to turn traces on, and I can sit there and all day long in production watch a transaction coming in and out and, you know, get the database calls, and I can even go down and see the actual keys.
Right.
So I'm looking for that comparable function in Omegamon that I could, you know, I got an issue going on right now. I can turn trace on for that tran, see it running, and determine whether or not, you know, I have a problem with it.
Right. Yeah, so now let's take, for example, real-time in Omegamon IMS. If you drill down and you're watching what's flowing through the region, you'll see the calls and you'll be able to see the SSAs and all that stuff and the key values as they flow through. But obviously each time you refresh the screen, they'll come and go. Now, that's not going to require any tracing. That's just going to be just real-time Omegamon. Now, what I'm hearing, though, is you want to be able to capture a sequence of calls and see all the keys and whatever as it goes through. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. So now setting that aspect of it aside, going to the trace. So then you're looking at running the Omegamon application trace, and that will give you the calls, call times, etc. But it's not really going to give you all the SSA breakouts. Yes, there would be, to run the application trace, there is obviously going to be additional traces, you know, that have to happen to get that data. And anytime you run a trace, there is going to be additional path length that can potentially be added. Dave, from an IMS performance analyzer standpoint, what would you have to say to our customer about this?
This is a tough one. I mean, to be frank and answer the question, Rick, yes, any traces you run over and above the standard capture, whether that's the IMS monitor or whether that's TRF or any of the selected options, there is additional overhead. And you have to weigh that as to the cost benefit to you. And your other tools, there are other tools that are also very good, but you'll find that in some cases, Omegamont has taken the approach that they try to absorb all of the overhead in Omegamont, if possible. Whereas some of the other tools that are out there, that overhead is already absorbed by IMS. It's happening under the guise of the IMS control region, application regions, whatever, and so it's not as visible. So the answer to you is yes, there's going to be additional overhead for the different tracing functions, but it shouldn't be any great amount more than anything you're currently using. There may be some different information you can get out of the different tools. As Ed was mentioning, you don't the SSA information may not be there. Many times, folks that don't have those kind of tools will have them turn on the PSB trace or something like that, which will give us just a snapshot. Especially if we know it's a particular transaction, turning on the PSB trace for that particular transaction for a few seconds, even or a few minutes, will capture all of that information. That doesn't help you after the fact. I understand that because you have to turn that on afterwards. But normally, if you're having a problem transaction, that's not an issue because you can always turn that on and capture it. It's rarely a one-time situation. So I hope that answers most of your question.
I had another one, too. On the PA report, I normally run a log report. Portion of it, and we have shared queues, and we have a lot of input coming in through OTMA.
Yes.
What I want to verify, I guess, is when I see elongated queue time, but yet the execution time is normal, that time that's spent in the queue should be accurately reflected by, I guess, what the O1 record of when that OTMA input came in and was put on the shared queue?
Right, until it got pulled off by whichever system is going to process it.
Okay.
And, the thing is, the problem there, Rick, is that that's going to vary depending on so many things like in shared queues, your parlim doesn't work the same as it does with the non-shared queues environment.
Oh, yeah, I know that.
Okay. So there's so many variables there that, sometimes you'll see more queuing or what seems like more queuing, but, we're still getting the job done and we're distributing the work a little better. So
yeah, I guess my biggest problem is when I see that on the report, I see a lot of queue time, but the execution time is normal, and I can't figure out why he's in the queue because that message region is open and available. We've assumed that there's a system-level problem that's preventing IMS from dispatching, but I wanted to make sure the report wasn't misleading me.
The report is probably not. I mean, nothing's cast in concrete, right? I mean, as much as we strive to, there's still a few bugs here and there in IMS. We try to avoid those, but they're inevitable. It's probably performing normal. My guess is that what you're seeing is just I don't know what to call it, but there's when you run shared queues, things run a little differently, and And even if there are regions available on the inputting system, for instance, the transaction may or may not be processed there. We have to take into consideration parlin values, which, like I say, are not the same meaning as a non-Syracuse environment. And we also have to take into consideration whether or not we're running WIFI or PWIFI regions. Now, if it's a WIFI or PWIFI region that's available to process those transactions, in most cases, we will process those on the front-end system, and you won't see any queue time. However, if it's just an available region that's not running PWIFI, just because there's an available region for that class, if there's already a transaction of that type running, we will go ahead and put it on the shared queue. So we could probably have an hour or 2 hour long discussion on the intricacies and idiosyncrasies of running with shared queues, but there's a lot of variables, and I suspect PA is probably giving you the straight scoop.
Okay. And just one other, and then I'll go away. What was that about? Oh, the CUA interface for a Megamon or the Classic, are they Plex shared queues capable, or is it just the XE interface?
That's just XE interface. Think of anything that's like N-way, multi-system, shared queue, MSC kind of level data is going to be in the portal.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks.
Sure.
At this point, we have no further questions in our queue. Once again, if you do have a question, that is star one. And Mr. Hamilton has a follow-up.
Well, I guess I'll ask another one then. You've got an ETE product,
mm-hmm.
end-to-end.
Mm-hmm.
That appears to just be VTAM-related 3270, not OTMA-capable, is it?
That's correct. It's just all we're going to measure is with the ETE address space is the SNA stuff. So if you want to take into account anything that might talk IP stack, stuff like that, you're going to need other technologies or monitoring capabilities to tie that in.
Yeah, because that would be nice to know.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because my biggest problem has always been is if I have something coming in from MQ, let's say, because I don't use Connect right now,
mm-hmm.
and it seems like most of all the enhancements appear to be in the Connect area, but I still go from MQ OTMA, and I need to know, am I having a problem with MQ and OTMA, and I don't find the PA report or a Megamon necessarily showing me that I'm having an issue with my OTMA interface.
Right. You'll get some status-y kind of stuff, but it's not going to give you detailed network host breakout stuff like that, which I kind of sense is what you're looking for.
Yeah. I'm just looking to see that I have a problem that something came in from MQ and IMS did not get it for some reason.
Right. That's where to solve the kind of issues you're talking, that's where customers might, use the dashboard thing I talked about earlier and pull in some MQ data and try to correlate it on a screen with information coming from Megamon IMS, and there's also maybe pulling information from Megamon networks, and then you can see, like with the network piece, what connections to what address spaces and applications, and filter down the views. And by consolidating the information, you might get a better view of what's going on.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks.
Hey, sure. Hey, Rick, you got to remember too. We're IMS people here. We don't want you to use MQ. We want you to use IMS Connect.
Yeah, I don't have much control over that, unfortunately. I'm trying to get them to go to Connect, but
understand
that could take a while.
And we have no further questions at this time. Ms. McCollum, I'll turn the conference back over to you for additional or closing remarks.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, everyone, for taking time out of your busy schedules to attend Performance is Key to Customer Satisfaction. What do you do to ensure the performance of IMS? A special thanks goes out to Ed Woods and David Vigers for being our speakers today. If you should have any questions, please do not hesitate to contact me, and I will be glad to put you in touch with a DV2 tools sales or technical sales specialist. Please watch our website for calls beginning again in September. Goodbye and have a great day.
Once again, that does conclude today's conference call. Thank you again for your participation and have a great day.